Okay. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ So, in dealing with different types of mind and mental factors that determine mind's nature, we have adopted strategy different from the book, as we have seen. We are starting, so to say, from the subtle minds and going back to the non-gross types of mind. And so we differ from the order of the book, and we have done so because this is a way how actually these minds, different kinds of minds and mental factors, are dealt with in the living tradition. So we start with the Mahagata Chittas, with the sublime minds, and we have pointed out that the reason for doing so is that we need these sublime minds to stabilize our mind to the extent that meditator can only see his own past mind when his mind has been stabilized, otherwise not. The flow of mind, so to say, the flow of mind of the in the Kama Vachara sphere, we can compare to the flow of water in the sand. It is spread. The flow of mind in these sublime states of mind is due to being stabilized. It is like flow of mind, flow of the water on the stone. It does not spread. It is kept together. For mind to occur, no matter what kind of mind, there has to be certainly certain kind of concentration. According to the Theravada Abhidhamma, not only the Theravada Abhidhamma, also the Sarvastivada Abhidhamma, also the Vaibhashika, each and every mind has concentration. Without concentration, no mind can occur. So, in the Theravada system, the concentration belongs to the so-called Sabba Chitta Sadharana. We will talk about them and analyze them later. Sabba Chitta Sadharana means, Sabba means all, Chitta means mind, Sadharana means common. So, common to all minds. There are seven. In the Theravada system, there are seven mental factors which are common to each and every mind without exception. So each and every of the 89 or 121 types of mind discussed in the Theravada Abhidhamma, each necessarily has concentration. In addition to, we will discuss this today, beside the concentration, we start with faso, the touch. After touch comes vedana, vedana means a reception of the object or experiencing the object. It can only appear with the condition that the touch with the object is there. So first there has to be touch in order that all the different types of minds and mental factors can appear. So the characteristic, the lakhana of touch is fusana. Fusana means touching. The touching itself, there is no one who touches. The touching itself is the characteristic of faso, of touch, which is the condition, necessary condition of the cognition. Without touch, there is no cognition. And the touch is especially the crucial understanding of touch is a crucial factor for understanding the functioning of mind. And for functioning of whatever Dhamma there is. The Rupa Dhammas or the Nama Dhammas, the mental factors of perception and the corporeal factors of perception, all we can experience only because there is touch. So it is said, ye dhamma nyataba te dhamma fusitaba. Whatever we can experience in this world, we can experience only due to touch. The touch does not mean that one necessarily has to touch the object with the body. The mental touch is also concerned. The mental touch is a crucial factor. And the mental touch is the decisive factor of mind. So we should see it very clearly that it is a mental factor. How do we know that it is a mental factor? For example, suppose if you taste something, you need your tongue to taste something, to taste the sweet taste. But suppose what will happen if somebody here is eating a lemon? Even so, you're not tasting it. The saliva will flow out of your mouth without touching it by the tongue itself. The this is the proof that the touch with the object is not the physical touch as such, which physical touch certainly has a role, but touch is a mental factor. So the touch, the taste of the touch, or the function of the touch is impingement. Impingement in the only but the impingement only exists in regard to the five doors perception. But what actually make things meet together is a mind. Then the manifestation of mind is that is called sannipata. It means that there is coming together between object, mind, and faculty. These three come together. Object, mind, and when object, mind, and faculty come together, also the mental faculty, of course, in six kinds of faculties, then there is a touch. And where there is a touch, mental process will start. Now that what keeps the mental factors together on the touch is then the concentration. Without concentration, the coexisting mental faculties, coexisting faculties and mental factors will not be kept together. So the mind, the actually how we experience concentration is that it is sampindana. Sampindana means literally molding together the coexisting mental factors. Coexisting mental factors where? Especially at the touch. That is why the samadhi is so important, as we have explained yesterday, for investigating the mind, because due to it the mind is kept together. Because the mind is kept together, the coexisting mental factors are kept together. Therefore, the meditator can then investigate the mind and its mental factor. When the mind has not been stabilized by going continuously to the same object, this force of keeping the coexisting mental factors together will not be noticeable. It becomes only noticeable when the cognition process continually appears in regard to the same object. That is why the function or taste of concentration is sahajatanam sampindana. The sampindana, as you know, the monks, we go to for Pindapata. Pindapata is called Pinda because in India, Sri Lanka, also Burma, traditionally one eats with hands. And how can you eat with hands? You have to put the rice and the curries together, mold them together, then you make a pinda. Then you can put it in your mouth. You cannot eat like this. So it is very important to understand. Now, if there is no concentration, we are touching our object like it is spreading all around. Therefore, there is no stable perception. We cannot eat, taste the object properly. Therefore, we are deluded about the object. Only when there is this force of holding the mental factors together stably, just like the hand putting together the curries and the rice, then we can fully experience the qualities of the objects. This is very important to understand. Why? The training in concentration is so important. Without concentration, no way of seeing things as they really are. And most of us, we are always eating like this, spreading with a whole mouth instead of really molding the rice and curries or whatever we eat together, and then we can very clearly experience the taste of the object. So that is why, according to Abhidhamma, the characteristic of concentration in the wholesome states of mind, I repeat and insist, only in the wholesome states of mind, the characteristic of concentration, of samadhi, of one-pointedness of mind, of ekagata, of samadhi, is pamokha. Pamokha means leadership. The concentration is that which in wholesome state of mind has leadership in the mind. Therefore, only samahitam chittam yatha bhutam pasati, only the concentrated mind can see things as they really are. Concentration itself is a wisdom of not spreading not letting the mind scatter, but keeping the mind together on the desired object. The mind with, of course, with its mental factors. So another characteristic of the concentration is, which is the condition of any mind arising, is that mind and mental factors are not scattered. And this, the state of not being scattered, in case of the wholesome mind, especially in the case of the powerful wholesome mind, the dhyana is nothing else but the powerful wholesome mind. This ability, the force, not letting the mind and mental factors scatter, become the leadership. Only when we maintain this leadership, we are able to learn to use wisdom. Without this leadership, as far as the yoga is concerned, and Buddhism in its essence is nothing but yoga. As long as we do not, in mind and mental factors, this leadership of samadhi, of one-pointedness, does not have clear function, then there is no way of seeing and knowing. The seeing and knowing comes from concentration. The opposite of this leadership of mind, the opposite of the concentrated mind, the opposite of the leadership of concentration is what? In which mind the leadership of one-pointedness becomes most unnoticeable? In udacha, in vichikitsa. Udacha and vichikitsa, the excitement and doubt, this is the manifestation of the inability of mind, of mind factor of one-pointedness, to exercise leadership. But when we speak of the jhanas, there are many, many stories in India about the yogis who have developed superior powers of mind, but they have not developed the wisdom. They have not developed the wisdom enough to control their emotions. The most important part of wisdom is the wisdom to control the emotions and to be master over them. So they were great, great yogis in India who attained incredible powers of concentration, but they could still get angry and they could still get seduced by celestial nymphs. The many, many yogis, the great yogis, they become attractive object for the celestial nymphs who come. So, and if unless one practices wisdom, then one can even so the power of concentration becomes very great, one can still be seduced by celestial nymphs, or one can get angry. And if it is a great yogi, there is a story in India that the desert of Rajasthan is the result of the anger of a yogi. There was Rajasthan in the old times was a very fertile land, and through it ran the river Saraswati, and so it was very fertile. But due to anger of a very powerful yogi, it all burned to desert and nothing remains. So is a story, I was not there, I don't know. That means, what do I want to say? That means that in jhana, the jhana is the is one-pointedness of a wholesome mind, not of unwholesome mind. If the mind is not wholesome, then this leadership of mind and mental factors can become also a very, very powerful. The more concentration one has, the more power of mind, then the power of evil becomes also great due to concentration. The power of good also becomes very great due to concentration. That is why the concentration is a leader. It is that mental factors which has leadership in the mind. So, for example, as you all know, the famous story of Devadatta. Devadatta, the cousin of the Sakyamuni Buddha. He has been doing all kinds of evil deeds to Buddha due to jealousy and due to competitiveness for innumerable kalpas. But the Devadatta was a very accomplished yogi, master in the supernatural faculties, but without wisdom. So he did everything he could do to harm the Buddha, but Buddha always, even so, he could easily have got rid of him. He is reported to have said that his powers that he has developed is due to Devadatta, because he always exercises restraint and tolerance. And then Devadatta, in the end, after he failed to kill the Buddha, have him killed by others, or to kill him himself, and after splitting the Sangha, he goes right to hell. The earth opens under him, and he falls down to hell. And the last words are he's taking refuge to Buddha. And the Buddha indeed makes a prediction when he comes from out of the Avicii hell, the worst hell that there exists after innumerable kalpas. He will indeed become the Pacheka Buddha because of his power of mind. Due to his power of mind, his repentance also very powerful, and as soon as he gets out of hell, he will become Buddha, because due to his repentance, his powerful unwholesome mind, due to powerful concentration, will become powerful wholesome mind. So this is meant by concentration, the having the function of leadership in the mind. For all the unwholesome and wholesome actions, it makes the wholesome actions the absorptions, the supernatural powers. They are not the domain of a weak mind, they are only domain of the strong mind, in which the concentration has leadership. And we know from history, the great evil men in history, like Adolf Hitler or Stalin and so on, they were also men of very powerful minds, but they used them to kill and exterminate others, not to benefit beings, but to get rid of those who they found uncomfortable. So the mind, the sublime mind, is always wholesome mind. It is very important to understand. And the concentration in the jhanas, in the absorption, is a wholesome one-pointedness, not unwholesome one-pointedness. And strictly speaking, it is very important what makes the mind wholesome or unwholesome. From the point of view of Abhidhamma, from the point of view of Paramatta, in Abhidhamma we have emphasized in the very beginning that in the Abhidhamma things are very different than in the normal world. In the Abhidhamma is the domain of the enlightened people, not the domain of non-enlightened people. So, according to Abhidhamma, what is wholesome? Strictly speaking, the wholesome means, the difference between wholesome and unwholesome is in yoniso manasikara and ayoniso manasikara. The attention towards object which is rooted in reality, and attention towards object which has no root in reality. And what is attention towards object rooted in reality, which makes mind wholesome? It is nothing else than anicca, dukkha, anatta, sunyata, or asubha. This is wholesome. So, strictly speaking, from the Abhidhamma point of view, the concentration which is really wholesome is a concentration belonging to the mind which understands things as impermanent. Therefore, understanding things as impermanent, it does not grasp at things. That is a wholesome concentration. That is Samma Samadhi. Samma Samadhi is, as we know, the last part of the Eightfold Noble Path. It is the, so to say, it is the summit of the Eightfold Noble Path. And the Samma Samadhi is nothing else but the wholesome one-pointedness of a mind understanding all objects in sense of impermanence, dukkha, selflessness, and emptiness, or in the Theravada Abhidhamma, asubha, the not pure. All that is impermanent is not pure and cannot be pure. This understanding is the essence wholesome concentration. And it is only possible through understanding of impermanence. So the wholesome, strictly speaking, from the Abhidhamma point of view, the wholesome concentration belongs to the mind with a manasikara. Manasikara means literally making in the mind, with making things in the mind in the sense of impermanence. That is a wholesome concentration. So then we come, as usual in our definition, the next step is defining our dhammas in the sense how they are manifested, the pachupatthana. And what is the pachupatthana of samadhi? The pachupatthana of samadhi is upasama, appeasement. Appeasement is only possible when the wholesome concentration, whole concentration of the wholesome mind, that is to say, is connected with understanding of the anicca. And dukkha. And the second manifestation of a wholesome, of one-pointedness in a wholesome mind is jnana, is knowledge. Knowledge in what sense? When concentration has a leadership in the mind, the state of mind can be compared to a state of a lamp without wind. If you have a butter lamp and no wind blowing, then you can use this butter lamp to illumine all the objects and you will see them very clearly. Why? Because the wholesome concentration, the concentration, one-pointedness of mind in the wholesome mind has leadership. Therefore, the flame of the mind does not scatter at all and illumines clearly whatever object the mind wants to see. And when the mind such is appeased and with knowledge, what is the primary cause of this condition? When the mind is appeased due to concentration, the primary cause of this condition is happiness, inner happiness. So the happiness is together with relaxation, because relaxation and clarity, pasadi, belongs to the inner concentration. This is this deep state of concentration is always accompanied by happiness, and happiness is its cause. So the deeper the state of concentration of the wholesome mind, the more subtle this happiness becomes. Strictly speaking, in the according to the Abhidhamic system, in the fifth jhana, there is no already feeling of happiness. There is only neutral feeling of neither happiness nor non-happiness. But this neutral feeling of neither happiness nor non-happiness, neither reception of the object as being pleasant or unpleasant, is actually the more sublime state of happiness. And this more sublime state of happiness, no matter how we call it, we can call it is upasamasukha, the happiness of appeasement. The more concentrated mind, the more subtle, then this happiness of appeasement becomes. It is very important to understand. So the dwelling in the developed concentration of the wholesome mind is called Ditta Dhamma Sukha Vihara, the dwelling in happiness at present. And the more developed the wisdom of the of mind, the more subtle, more sublime becomes this dwelling in happiness at present. So it means, because we have said that manifestation of concentration is jnana, is knowledge, the deeper the knowledge, the more sublime these states of concentration become. So truly speaking, the arahats or the buddhas, they have the perfect dwelling in happiness at present, because their wholesome condition of mind is not interrupted by any unwholesome factors. So we have covered the five jhana angas, the five causes of the first absorption, which we have said become very clear in the flow of mind of the meditator who has stabilized his absorption, so that when he touches, we have started explaining the sabbacitta sadharana, the mental factors always in present in each and every moment of mental cognition. When he touches with his mind, the flow of his mind, he can only touch, that means the his flow of his past mind, we have said. The mind, as it is said, just like a finger cannot point itself, just like a knife cannot cut itself, the mind also cannot see itself at present. It can only see itself in the past moment. But that which sees that past moment is already a different mind. And now, because the meditator has stabilized his mind in the jhana, that the content of that mind does not change. So, as long as he investigates his mind, as long as he wants to investigate his mind, it always stays in the same, with the same object and with the same content of the mind. Therefore, it is very easy to investigate it. And how does he investigate it? By touching it, of course. That is why we have started with the analysis of the other mental factors beside the jhana angas, beside the causes of the absorption. We have started with faso. Faso is, comes first. And faso, the, as we have pointed out, the manifestation of the faso is sannipata, the coming together of the object, of the mind, of consciousness, and of faculty. Some Buddhist schools, like the Sautrantikas especially, they object to touch, to faso being qualified as a mental factor, because they say the just coming together of mind, object, and faculty cannot be considered as an independent mental factor with its own characteristic, because it is only these three things coming together. But we leave this at that. You can later, when you study, develop interest in Abhidhamma, you can study Abhidharma Kosha. There you will find a long discussion on this subject. We leave it behind and we come to the other in Theravada 7 Sabba Chitta Sadharana, the mental factors which are present in each and every moment of cognition. Without them, no cognition can exist. In the Abhidhamma books, especially like in the Dhamma Sangani, they always speak of the faso panchaka. These are the faso panchaka, means the group of five factors, starting with faso, starting with contact, with touch. Why? they always speak of them because they represent, when they appear, the five khandhas are there. The five khandhas can appear only when there is a touch. Touch between faculty, consciousness, and the object. And the five khandhas are the most important. So to say, elements or phenomena of existence. The, as we have started in the beginning, the Suttanta method, the method of the suttas, is different from the Abhidhamma in the sense that the suttas especially analyze our experience in the world in terms of the five aggregates of existence, the 12 spheres of perception, the 18 elements of perception, and so on. But in the case of Abhidhamma, Abhidhamma is called, as we have said, Abhidhamma, in the sense that it is a special Dhamma in the sense of it belongs to the enlightened man, and special that it gives all the details. Therefore, Abhidhamma is not satisfied just with the five khandhas. It analyzes each and every Dhamma, each and every phenomena of perception, phenomena in the sense of phenomena which has its own nature. That is a real phenomena. But still, even in the Abhidhamma books, the most important elements of perception, most important elements of existence come first. And the most important elements of existence is nothing but this group Faso Panchaka. So, when the meditator has distinguished the five factors of absorption, the pancha jhana angas, then he comes to the faso panchaka group. So after jhana anga group comes the faso panchaka group. In the jhana anga group, we find only one mental factor which necessarily, as we have seen, exists in each and every form of cognition, and that is the concentration. So among the seven factors of mind, seven chetasikas that belong to each and every state of concentration, we have analyzed so far two. The touch or contact and concentration. Concentration, strictly speaking, should come only after faso panchaka, after the group of five. But because we have based ourselves on the living experience, not on the scholastic, so we have analyzed it before faso panchaka. So the next mental factor, which is common to each and every form of cognition, each and every moment of cognition, after contact comes necessarily Vedana. Vedana is usually translated as feeling, but I don't like the translation very much, because what we in Western languages understand as a feeling is not quite the same as what is understood by Vedana. Why, for example, we say, I feel he's not coming today. There is no such feeling in Vedana. Vedana means just a reception or experience of either pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. This is what Vedana means. No more than that. This Vedana, the word Vedana itself is from the root vit. Vit means like vidya. The vit itself means knowing the object. Experiencing object is knowing the object. It is said, especially emphasized in the Visuddhimagga, that sabbe dhamma vedana sammosarana, all the elements of perception, all the elements of existence, they sammosarana, they come together in Vedana. Therefore, Vedana is the center of our experience. All the other mental factors they come together with the reception of the object, or experiencing of the object, or experiencing the taste of the object, which is a function of Vedana. The function of Vedana means nothing else than experiencing the taste of the object. And the other mental faculties are the factors which determine the condition how one tastes the object. So it is compared in the Visuddhimagga, even in the commentary to Abhidhammata Sangaha, the Vedana among the mental factors determining the nature of mind is like a king. The other mental factors, king is tasting the food, and the other mental factors, they are like servants preparing food for the king to eat. So the king tastes the food and says, I like this, I don't like. And the other mental factors, they are preparing that dish for the king. So it is very important to understand why then the vedana comes right after faso, after touch or contact. Because all we can know in this world is only that which we can touch. And that which we can touch is then tasted by vedana, by feeling. So the unpleasant feeling is then the experience of the undesired object. Pleasant feeling is the experience of the desired object, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant feeling is the experience of the neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. It is very important to understand this. That means that when there is a experience of unpleasant object, the mind with its mental factors is milapana, is waning, it is, because it is experiencing the unpleasant object, it does not bloom. But the mind and the mental factors start blooming, growing, when they experience the pleasant object. So being caught in samsara is nothing else than being caught in the attachment to the pleasant object and to dislike for the unpleasant object. And when neither pleasant object nor unpleasant object arises, what is the condition of the mind? Not clarity. And due to not clarity, then boredom. Laziness. Slackness. Tiredness. Sinking of the mind. All this is the condition of experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. So this condition of the neither pleasant nor experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object, because the object is not clear, is described. We have to specially search for the object in order to see it. So to experience clearly, just like one is being caught in samsara, is being caught in attachment to pleasant object, dislike for unpleasant object, and ignorance in regard to neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. And just what are the manifestations of ignorance I have just described. So the in the condition of experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object, in the Abhidhamma commentaries it is compared, suppose there is a hunter going, chasing after an injured deer. Now he follows his track, and he comes to a rock. Then he sees the deer has entered the rock here. Then he goes around till he finds out the on the other side of the rock, or on the left or on the right, again the steps. So he knows the deer, injured deer, must have passed through here, but he actually does not see it clearly. This is a condition of experiencing for a normal, not a very bright mind, experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. He has been chasing the deer of a pleasant or unpleasant object, then he knows that after another pleasant or unpleasant object appears, there is an interval. In that interval, there must have been the neutral feeling, but he actually does not see it very clearly. Just like the hunter does not see the traces of the deer, but he can clearly deduce, since they continue on the other side of the rock, the deer must have passed through here. This is normally our condition of experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. It is connected with not clear knowing. As far, if one does not practice meditation, so in the condition of the pleasant, experiencing the pleasant object, then the mind and its mental factors will grow, blossom, prosper. In experiencing the unpleasant object, the mind and the mental factors will fade. In experiencing the neutral object, the mind and mental factors will neither blossom and grow, nor will it fade. Because it neither in a state of experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object, when the object is not clear, this is very especially true about the meditation. When you have practiced meditation for some time and experienced the little better concentration, where the distractedness of mind is being kept in check. So what is the situation there? The mind becomes appeased. So the appeasement of mind is the manifestation also of the experiencing neither pleasant nor unpleasant object. If the mind experiences the manifestation of experiencing unpleasant object, the mental object especially, is then the mental pain. This is a manifestation of unpleasant feeling. In case of experiencing the pleasant object, it is the opposite of pain. Asada, the enjoyment. Then, if it is a case of mental enjoyment, especially in the wholesome mind, then what happens? What is the cause for this enjoyment of mental object? The pasadi, the relaxation and clarity. They, as we have seen, they are also the necessary conditions for wholesome concentration. So we could speak a lot about the Vedana because it is a very complex. We leave it here because we have much and much to learn. The next factor determining our experience of the world, belonging to the Faso Panchaka, belonging to the experience of the five aggregates of existence, which determine the state of being in this world, is then sanya. Sanya means the grasping the sign of the object. So tasting these two factors of mind, that means tasting the object, the Vedana, or experiencing the object, or the best, like the Chinese translated, receiving the object and grasping the sign of the object, these two, they are the most prominent the factors determining the nature of our experience in the world. Because they are so important, even so, they are also sankhara. They are named as a separate sankhara, as a separate khanda, aggregate of existence. But they are nothing but a sankhara. They are nothing but a will formations. But because they have a so important and determinative role, they are named as separate aggregates of existence, as a separate factors determining the state of our existence. So when we receive the object as being experiencing it as either pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, at the same time we are grasping the sign of that object. This appears simultaneously together with the touch. Where there is touch, there is reception of the object, and there is grasping at the sign of the object. So, due to this grasping at the sign of the object, then we can separate the qualities of the object. without taking, without grasping the sign of the object, we cannot separate the qualities of the object. We cannot separate black from white, or from green, or from red. We can only do that when we grasp at the object together with receiving it and touching it. So the characteristic of perception is then specifying or separating the qualities of objects. Then, okay, we finish the sanya perception, and we will stop there. But let me finish the perception so that we don't need to go through it again. Day after tomorrow will be next lesson, not tomorrow. So the actual taste or function of perception is tat evanti puna sanjanana pachaya nimita karana. For the purpose of perceiving the object again, then we make the sign of the object in our mind. Just like it is compared in the Visuddhimagga with tachako. Tachako means, how do you say in English, tachako? Tachako, carpenter. Huh? Tachako is carpenter. Just like a carpenter, he makes a sign of the wood. Here I will cut it. Huh? Then he goes away, does his job. And after he comes back, then he knows immediately, here I will cut it. So similarly, the taste of perception is that we make the sign of the object for perceiving it again in the future. And our perception in the future will be determined by this sign we have made in our mind. Then the manifestation of perception is the holding to the object according to the sign that we have made in our mind, or interpreting it in accordance with the sign we have made in our mind. Just it is compared to the blind man in the dark, blind man touching the elephant, then touching his tail he will say that the elephant is like a pipe, touching his feet he will say the elephant is like a pillar, touching his trunk he will say that the elephant is like a rock. According to whatever he has in mind, he will then interpret his experience. And the padatthana, the primary cause for perception to arise, is the sign of the object as it is established in our mind. So, as the Visuddhimagga explains, the actual understanding of the object has three stages. First, the most basic interpretation that is according to the sign of the object, that is sanya. Then differentiation in accordance with the sign of the object, that is vijnana, that is a more detailed stage of distinction. And finally, panya. Panya is on the base of, is a detailed understanding of the object due to penetrating thoroughly its true characteristics. So we will end here today, and we come to the rest of the mental factors present in each and every moment of mind, and to other factors day after tomorrow. So let us transfer merit.
Akasatta chabumattha devanaga mahitika punyang tang anumoditva chiramrakantu lokasasanam. Akasatta chabumattha devanaga mahitika punyang tang anumoditva chiramrakantu desanam. Akasatta chabumattha devanaga mahitika punyang tang anumoditva chiramrakantu tumamparam. Devo vasatu kalen sasa sampati hetu cha pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko.
So if you all have this book, so please kindly, because we are not learning it, I make it little difficult for you, because I don't proceed according to the order of the book. So because it, I try to make it more interesting for you. So this is a Herausforderung, challenge for you to study a little bit and see what are the sabbacitta sadharana, the seven mental factors common to all minds, and which are the six scattered mental factors. These we will deal with tomorrow. These seven mental factors common to all kinds of perception, and the six mental factors scattered, they all together, 13 factors, they are called anya samanya. They appear in minds no matter whether mind is wholesome or unwholesome, or the resultant mind or automatic mind. They appear without differentiation into wholesome and unwholesome. These factors become wholesome in the wholesome mind, unwholesome in the unwholesome mind. They have no, as such, they are not connected with any moral wholesome or unwholesome or evaluation as such. So they are very important. So please kindly, this is your homework. You have the whole tomorrow, whenever you're free, or today. So look these factors up. And also we are discussing, we are starting among the chittas, we are starting with the Mahagata chittas. So you look up at the Mahagata chittas, the five absorptions in the subtle forms and the four absorptions in the formless. This is the subject matter which we are dealing with in the next lesson, so try to understand them. Then it will be much easier to understand what I